This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome. I'm Natalie Pynchon, and this is the February 20th, 2015 podcast. It includes articles on the following topics: hydrocephalus, pituitary surgery, neurosurgical history, vascular disorders, and innovation in neurosurgery. Changes in cerebrospinal fluid flow assessed using intraoperative MRI during posterior fossa decompression for Chiari malformation. A clinical article by Aaron Bond and colleagues. The best surgical procedure for patients with Chiari malformations is controversial. In some instances, a bone decompression alone can achieve adequate results without the increased risk of complications that come with performing a decompression and duroplasty. However, performing a bone decompression alone has a decreased success rate and an increase in the need for repeat operation. Ideally, there would exist an intraoperative tool to assess at various stages of the operation the extent of decompression needed in individual patients. Ultrasound is currently commonly used, but with variable results. New intraoperative tools, such as intraoperative MRI, provide another potentially higher resolution and more accurate modality. The authors performed a prospective study of the use of intraoperative MRI to assess the adequacy of decompression during surgery after each step of the process in patients with Chiari 1 malformations. The authors report that simply by positioning the patients with the neck flexed in position for surgery, the dorsal CSF space opens up. This limits the capability of any intraoperative modality to adequately determine whether a sufficient amount of decompression has been obtained. Sir Victor Horsley, pioneer craniopharyngioma surgeon. A historical vignette by José Pascual and co-workers. Sir Victor Horsley, who lived from 1857 to 1916, was one of the founding fathers of neurosurgery and is considered the pioneer of pituitary surgery. There are official records of the first pituitary adenomas he operated on at Queen Square in the 1900s, although his personal notes on some additional pituitary procedures performed on private patients were lost. In this article, the authors have investigated the only written account of these pituitary surgeries, which was provided in the treatise on pituitary surgery titled La patologia chirurgica dell'ipofisi, published in 1911 by the Italian surgeon Giovanni Verga from Pavia University. Verga's monograph contains a detailed transcription of 10 transcranial procedures performed by Horsley for the treatment of pituitary tumors. Among these lesions, two had topographical and macroscopic features that unmistakably correspond to those of craniopharyngiomas, the papillary type in one case and the adamantinomatous variant in the other. The authors provide an original translation of the descriptions of these two cases. Horsley achieved the successful surgical removal of the tumor with features of the adamantinomatous variant on June 27, 1907, through a two-staged subtemporal approach. The procedure did not cause significant complications for the young patient, who survived for 18 months. Additional written evidence of this procedure was given by the American neurologist Archibald Church, whose report is also described in the present article. The authors conclude, based on the information they present from these sources, that Victor Horsley may rightfully be considered the pioneer of craniopharyngioma surgery. Cellar and paraceller tumor removal without discontinuing antithrombotic therapy. A clinical article by Yoshikazu Ogawa and Teiji Tominaga. Treatment with dual antiplatelet agents and long-term anticoagulant therapy is increasingly common, but carries risks during surgical procedures. Evidence-based recommendations have proposed discontinuation of antithrombotic treatment or introduction of bridging therapy in some procedures with less invasive and lower risk of bleeding. However, neurosurgical procedures without discontinuation of these treatments have received little investigation. 15 consecutive patients with cellar and paracellar tumors were treated through the transphenoidal approach without discontinuation of antithrombotic therapy. Clinical data were compared with another 15 patients without preoperative antithrombotic therapy. Gross total removal of the tumor, or total aspiration of the content of Rathke's cleft cyst, was achieved in 13 patients. Subtotal removal was achieved in one patient with a small remnant in the cavernous sinus. No differences were found in intraoperative bleeding and operation time between the antithrombotic agent group and control group. No patient required transfusion. All patients were discharged on postoperative day 12 without neurological deficits. In conclusion, the present study suggests that discontinuation of antithrombotic therapy may be unnecessary before the typical transphenoidal surgery. Large randomized clinical trials are needed to confirm these findings. Role of superior hypophyseal artery in visual function impairment after paraclinoid carotid artery aneurysm surgery. A clinical article by Tetsuyoshi Horiuchi and co-workers. The authors retrospectively analyzed the association between superior hypophyseal artery status and postoperative visual function in patients with ruptured and unruptured superior hypophyseal artery aneurysms. Sacrifice of the superior hypophyseal artery did not lead to postoperative visual impairment. Therefore, unilateral superior hypophyseal artery sacrifice may be safe in many but not all patients with superior hypophyseal artery aneurysm. In contrast, simultaneous clipping of bilateral paraclinoid carotid artery aneurysms was a significant risk factor for visual impairment. Special attention should be paid in cases of simultaneous treatment of bilateral paraclinoid carotid aneurysms. Technological innovation in neurosurgery, a quantitative study. A clinical article by Hani Marcus and co-authors. Technological innovation within healthcare may be defined as the introduction of a new technology that initiates a change in clinical practice. Neurosurgery is a particularly technology-intensive surgical discipline, and new technologies have preceded many of the major advances in operative neurosurgical techniques. The purpose of this study was to evaluate the landmark technological innovations in neurosurgery using patents and peer-reviewed publications as metrics of technology development and clinical translation, respectively. In all, 11,672 patents and 208,203 publications related to neurosurgery were identified. The top-performing technology clusters over the last 50 years were image guidance devices, clinical neurophysiology devices, neuromodulation devices, operating microscopes, and endoscopes. For image guidance and neuromodulation devices, the authors found a highly correlated rapid rise in the number of patents and publications, which suggests that these are areas of technology expansion. An in-depth analysis of neuromodulation patents revealed that the majority of high-performing patents were related to deep brain stimulation. characterization of radiation-induced cavernous malformations and comparison with a non-radiation cavernous malformation cohort. A clinical article by Jeremy Cutsforth-Gregory and colleagues. Cavernous malformations are multilobulated, well-circumscribed, but angiographically occult vascular malformations that may be sporadic or familial. Rarely, they develop after brain irradiation, in which case they are called radiation-induced cavernous malformations. The radiological and pathological appearances of radiation-induced cavernous malformations are indistinguishable from non-radiation cavernous malformations. But previous studies have suggested that radiation-induced cavernous malformations have a more aggressive natural history. The authors retrospectively reviewed the clinical and radiological characteristics of patients with radiation-induced cavernous malformations. They then compared features of radiation-induced cavernous malformations to 270 patients with non-radiation cavernous malformations. The first calculations of prospective hemorrhage risk for radiation-induced cavernous malformations are reported. The major findings of the study were that radiation-induced cavernous malformations occur within the radiation port approximately 12 years after irradiation, with a longer latency and higher likelihood of cavernous malformation multiplicity if radiation is administered at a younger age. Prospectively, the risk of symptomatic hemorrhage was 4.2% for radiation-induced cavernous malformations and 2.3% for non-radiation cavernous malformations per person year. In the absence of symptoms at presentation, the risk of hemorrhage for radiation-induced cavernous malformations was 4.2% compared with 0.35% for non-radiation cavernous malformations. Ultimately, asymptomatic radiation-induced cavernous malformations have a natural history distinct from non-radiation cavernous malformations. Further study will be necessary to determine the most appropriate management steps to minimize their substantial risk of hemorrhage. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. And for more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.